Okay, wonderful. Let's see if I can get this right. Awesome. All right, can everyone see the screen? Yeah, it's all good? Okay, yeah. Awesome, wonderful. All right, so thank you again for making the time to be here. And Marilyn, thank you for organizing this. I'm really excited. So what I wanted to do was talk about the idea of bringing inclusion to workplaces through compassion. And a little bit of a background about me is that I've been an advocate of workplace compassion for 6-7 years now. Before that, I used to be a cancer biologist and I ran a business where I was taking care of seniors. So a lot of life experiences kind of drove me to thinking about compassion and how it can impact our workplace experience. And which is why I created a framework, which I've been teaching across the world, I mean, in different companies. And one of the things that I really noticed over time was that one of the biggest challenges that organizations are facing right now is that they are not able to embrace the oneness of that experience. And I wanted to offer a framework today based on compassion that could potentially help see the people in our workplace differently and how we interact with them differently. So let me start this with a story, right? Imagine that you are in a party, you've been invited to a party or a networking event, and the food is great, the drinks are amazing, and you're there and you realize that people have already formed their little clusters. You know, there's groups of people with drinks in their hand, with their appetizers, and they are talking amidst each other. And you desperately want to belong to that setting. So what you do is you grab a drink and you believe that you have a lot of things to offer to these conversations. So you come and you sit and you try to laugh as they laugh and you try to interject. But every single group that you go to, you feel like you are kind of snubbed. You know, you feel like you don't belong there. You kind of feel like people are ignoring you or acknowledging you and then immediately going back to the conversation. I went through this experience a few years ago in a networking event. And I'm still remembering the experience, the human experience that I went through, right? I'm wondering, am I doing something wrong? Am I dressed properly? Am I holding my drinks okay? And after a while, that conversation turns into, what's the easiest route to the door? You know, so how quickly can I get out of here? That's my thinking process. Now, this is a 3-hour event that I was in. Imagine the same thing happening in a workplace. You're stuck there for a long period of time and you've gotten in, everything looked great at the door, but now you're in and your people have already formed clusters. And you're trying hard to belong and you want to contribute to the conversations, but unfortunately, you don't have a place there anymore. Now, this is the opposite of what we are trying to do today. What we are going to try to do today is to create an experience that is the polar opposite of what we just described. And what I want to do is, and hopefully you're all in a safe space. So what I want you to do is share a few moments of a loving kindness meditation with me. So if that's okay with you, just a couple of minutes. I'm not going to take you through the long journey of metta and loving kindness that would take a long time. But what I want to point out is this idea of metta. Metta is a Pali word, which means loving kindness or friendship. And it is simply the recognition that all of us, irrespective of who we are and which part of the world we are in, what our background is, we all have the tendency, the ability, the capability to wish well for everybody, to have that sense of expansiveness. We can't always carry that expansiveness, but we all have that capacity to reach into ourselves and give an expansive sense of wellness for ourselves and the world around. So if you're comfortable, I'm going to invite you to sit in a space that's comfortable for you. If you want to, you can close your eyes. If not, just have a soft gaze looking forward. And this as a form of arrival, just take a deep breath in and hold and exhale. Simply bring your awareness to your breath. You know, the idea is whatever is outside, whatever your day has been so far, and whatever is holds for you today, just this moment now, you are here in this moment with your breath in a space of gentle learning and gentle transformation. Once again, I'm going to invite you to consider that you, the people who love you, the people that you love, the strangers in your life, the cashiers, the cab drivers, the people who stand at intersections, the people who teach you by hurting you, the people who cause you discomfort and make you grow, the people who do not look like you, the people you do not know about, the people who have come and gone, everybody on this little blue planet floating in space, everybody deserves to be happy, to be loved, to be wanted, to be included. So I invite you in your mind to repeat these words of affirmation. May we all be free from danger and anxiety. May we all be loved. May we all be happy. May we all be at ease. May we all be free from danger and anxiety. May we all be loved. May we all be happy. May we all be at ease. I invite you to let that sense of warmth settle into you. And carrying that beautiful message of oneness, whenever you're comfortable, I invite you to open your eyes. Welcome back to this reality. Thank you for participating. I appreciate this. What I want to do is take you on a quick journey of how we are going to spend the next 30, 40 minutes together, or 40 minutes, 50 minutes together. I've divided this presentation into three parts. The first is I want to get ourselves into an understanding of inclusion and compassion, and why, as a case I'm going to make, is why they are the same. They are not too different from each other. And the second one is I'm going to offer a framework on how in your workplace you can take this and create a shift in how you see the world around you, how you try to include people that are different from you. And finally, I'm going to invite you to become an advocate for inclusion outside your workplace and in your workplace. So let's first understand together the idea of inclusion and compassion. This is how Gallup describes inclusion. Inclusion refers to a cultural and environmental feeling of belonging. It is the sense in which employees feel valued, respected, accepted, and encouraged to fully participate in the organization. And I'm going to imagine you to create an emotional connection with what is presented here. Imagine that you are in a workplace, you are a new employee, and in that group, you feel that, again, like that initial story that I shared in that networking meeting, imagine that you do not feel valued, that your opinions don't matter, people don't respect you for the skills and the value that you bring to this setting, and you don't feel accepted. And in that context, you don't feel that you want to give your best. You cannot give your best because you're afraid of raising your voice and sharing your opinion. In other ways, you don't feel psychologically safe. That's one setting. The idea of inclusion is, however, feeling where, again, you are in the new workplace, and you feel that you are totally a part of this group, that you are a part of this pride. And again, humans, like many other animals, the greatest need is to feel belonged. You take away that belonging, you take away the power from within the within that person. And as an organization, you take the power away from the human value that it brings to the organization. So if you're valued, you're respected, you're accepted, and you're encouraged to fully participate, that's when inclusion is happening. And you can imagine when you are in a setting like that, you want to give your best. You're not looking for the easiest way out the door, so the turnover is less. You feel compelled to contribute your own ideas and opinions because you're not shot down and you belong to your tribe that accepts you. Your morale is high. The job satisfaction is better. Productivity is more. Engagement is high. So there's a lot of reasons why inclusion should be a mainstay of a successful organization. But often, organizations think about inclusion in the context of diversity and stop there. Diversity and inclusion are two different things, right? When you think of diversity, it's basically assembling a people. It is a strategic initiative. It's assembling a group of people who have differences in their genders, religions, race, age, ethnicity, sexual orientation, education, any other attributes. And that kind of a diversity has been increasing in the US and globally for decades. In a while, there will be no more minorities, there will be no majorities, there will be, you know, all groups of people all working together towards goals. And we know now, even at the current setting, because of the different, you know, in biology, I used to be a biologist. In biology, we have this idea of a hybrid vigor. You have, you know, different animals with different breeds, for example, different breeds of dogs, they come together. The offspring has a better vigor for survival. They have more disease resistance and live longer and all of that. So in an organization, you bring people with different perspectives, ideas, and orientations together in the same setting. Suddenly, there is a vigor. There is an opportunity for people to bring more to the setting rather than a monochromatic view of success. But diversity does not equate inclusion. You cannot stop by just hiring a bunch of people with different orientations and genders and races and so on. It's important to make them feel belonged at the table. And that is a cultural and social and behavioral narrative. Same as, you know, bringing the being in a meet in a networking event, and somebody welcomes you into the group and say, by the way, why don't you share a little bit about you? It's a cultural, social, behavioral narrative that makes people want to give and share their best in that setting. And inclusion is important for diversity to thrive. As one of the HR leaders, I forget her name, she was sharing that inclusion attracts more diversity. You know, we live in a world of glass doors, and you say, I feel belonged. I feel that I'm included in my workplace. You immediately write, you want to share that opinion to the world around you, to your friends, and you attract more talent. People from your own cultures, people from other cultures, they become part of that community and growth happens. As you can see from all of this conversation so far, while diversity is a strategic decision about hiring, about bringing people together, inclusion is an emotional experience. Inclusion is a human decision. And a group of humans feeling the same way about including others, that's the culture. A culture is like an ocean made of raindrops, many raindrops. And so the individual opinions and thoughts and behaviors about inclusion, they all come together to create that cultural narrative of inclusion. And the question is, being the emotional experience it is, how do you make that happen in a workplace? Because it's a mindset shift and that requires time, practice, and cultural support. This is where I, as the forever advocate of workplace compassion, become excited. Because I think the idea of practicing compassion in a workplace becomes an opportunity. It changes the mindset, surely, but steadily, it is possible, and that's how it is done. So what is compassion, right? So in my mind, the simplistic way of looking at compassion is it's caring in action. It's the inner ability that we all possess to resonate with somebody else's challenge and ask, what can I do about it? Doing something about it. So compassion is rooted in action. And it's a four-step process. And it starts with noticing and then feeling for the person who is going through the challenge, suspending the judgment around that suffering and for that person, and then asking, what can I do about it? The alleviation step. So noticing, feeling, suspending, and stepping into action, right? It's a very difficult term for a lot of people to follow, because it's an ancient word. Empathy, compassion, these are all ancient words. So over time, these words have taken a lot of meaning, right? Different people have given different attributes to the idea of compassion. So when I face a lot of resistance when I take this idea to workplaces and I talk to people, let's say somebody who has been only in the engineering space for a long period of time, and I talk about compassion, there is an element of, you know, maybe you should take this to a church. Maybe you should take this to a temple, you know? And I say, no, I'm talking about a universal human experience here. And it's as relevant as the Dalai Lama says, it's as relevant to the workplace as it is to any facet of living. It takes a little bit of an education there. But, you know, from a very practical sense, I believe that, you know, as the rivers kind of come together to make the ocean happen, there is these different behaviors, different streams of behaviors that can go into creating a compassionate behavior, a compassionate experience. I believe that, you know, there's a self-compassion, the ability to put people first, the ability to be abundant in our giving, to be mindful in our thoughts, in our actions, in our words, to embrace that oneness, to be compassionate and kind in our communication as much as possible, to be vulnerable to the right people in the right ways, to think big with perspective and purpose, and to practice gratitude. These are the different streams. I call these the nine pillars of compassion. These nine streams can come together, and with time and with practice, they change the mindset of the organization. And in our case, if you are looking at inclusion, compassion can make that happen. But before we talk about that, I want to once again, I explored the idea of compassion through a little situation, right? So imagine that you're walking on a long and lonely road with a friend, and there is a pit in the middle of that road, and a friend falls into that. There's no one else around. Now, you could walk away, it's not your problem, or you can look down and say, oh, I'm so sorry for you, and walk away. That's even worse. That's what you see in Facebooks and I'm so sorry for you kind of messages. Or you could feel so much in emotional resonance with that person that you could jump into that pit with that person, feels good for a second, and then nothing else is happening because now you have disempowered yourself. Or you could go through these four steps. You could notice that your friend has fallen into the pit and you emotionally resonate with that person. You say, what if it was me? What if I was in that pit as this other person? What if I take away the judgments that come in? You know, I'm not here saying, you know, you should have been a little bit more careful. You remember last year when you walked through the same path and you fell in, you're so clumsy. You know, no judgments there, right? You just say, it has happened. The situation is unfolding in front of your eyes. And the next question is, what can I do to help my friend? Even if it means walking away from that place, even if it means running to the nearby village, getting a ladder and coming back. So that's the four steps. A compassionate experience is incomplete without action. It is incomplete without emotion, because then you are not driven to action. And it is incomplete if you do not overcome the judgments that and the biases that block you from action. So I want to pause here for a second because we are going into the next stage. I want to stop and quickly ask if you have a quick question or so that I can answer. Okay, we're good. All right, awesome. So let's go to this framework. Okay, so now we have the framework of what inclusion is. Hopefully we all have a buy-in for how inclusion feels like in the workplace setting and why it's important. And we have a framework for how compassion operates, the decisions, the different parts that go into making a compassionate decision. We want to apply that in the context of inclusion. So the very first step of compassion is noticing. And the next four steps, what we are going to do, this is what we are going to do. We are going to take the four steps of a compassionate response and first apply it to somebody else in your organization who's not potentially not feeling included, who doesn't feel belong. And as a second step, we are going to see if what if I was the person who is not being included, who is going through that inclusion challenge. So that's step number two. So let's first look at it in the context of you as a person who is empowered, who is in the organization. You're not going through the challenge right now, but it's possible that the structure of your organization or the people in your organization are not practicing inclusion, maybe from, you know, place of not knowing that it's important, however that is, but there is obviously some suffering happening. And you want to create a compassionate response in that setting, right? So the first step is to ask, how is your workplace? You know, take an unfettered look at how your workplace diversity looks like. The very first step of a compassionate response is noticing, and that is by getting to know the people that you're working with and asking how you can actively see the challenges. So let me take this. Looks like I'm not able to move forward. Oh. Okay, awesome. No worries. I think I'm able to move right now. Okay, so the very first step of noticing is making the time to know people. You know, there's a story about a professor who had a final exam, and he had two questions in the exam. He said the first question was a technical question, and that had 50% of the score. And then the other question was a simple question. Do you know the name of the lady who's cleaning our restrooms? And that had 50% of the score. Everybody thought that was a trick question. And they said, you know, why are we supposed to know this? And when the grading came and everybody had scored really poorly, the professor explained, See, the majority of the learnings that you carry from your workplace or from your school, you're not going to apply in your life. But the simple idea of respecting and knowing the people that you're going to work with, that you're working with, that's probably the bigger lesson that has more ROI for you than anything technical that you're, any of the equations that you're learning today. So getting to know the people. So as you consider the diversity in your workplace, I'm going to invite you to ask, do you know the names of the people that you work with, and not just their names, their family settings? Do you recognize them as the humans they are beyond their identities and roles in the workplace? How do you know them as humans? And if you don't, and even if you do to some extent, I would invite you to have some conversations with them. Just get to know people, you know. Let's have a coffee. And I've recognized that over coffee, people seem to ease up. Or sometimes a drink, but they ease up far better and get to open up than in the workplace. I just say, why don't we go for a walk? Why don't we have a coffee together? And then listen, because listening and hearing are two different things, right? So to me, hearing is an experience of the ear and listening is an experience of the heart. And listening, as we're going to see now, it's the ability to listen to the story of the other person without biases, without adding our own stories to that experience. The second part of the compassion experience, as we saw, was the feeling, right? How much emotion are we attributing to this? Because unless we are moved by the person's lack of inclusion, if you see that somebody is not being included in that workplace, and we don't have an emotional response to it, if we don't empathize with that, there is no response that's going to happen. So what I want to do is share a little video from Kung Fu Panda. I guess by now everybody has watched this movie. This is the first one. It's a really lovely movie. And if you didn't, here's a little background. So Po is a panda who has a very ordinary life as a noodle seller. And he adores Kung Fu and the Furious Five. And they are these, you know, these masters of Kung Fu who live on the in the Jade Palace. And by a series of quirky incidents, he ends up being selected as the Dragon Warrior, the one who is supposed to wield the ultimate power. But the day he is elected, the Furious Five, the masters of Kung Fu, are angry because they were not selected and they think he is an abomination. He should not be in Kung Fu. So here's what happens that night. Okay, so hopefully you can hear the audio. So of course that's cute, and then you see how the whole transformation happens and how they welcome him and make him belong into the setting. So I just want us to tap into that emotion for a while, right? Once again, going back to the four steps, noticing, feeling, suspending judgment, and stepping into action. The very first step is we invited people into our conversational area, into our mindset by inviting them into conversations and saying, you know, let's get to know each other. And in that process, can I see the challenges that you're going through? Is there a way that I can make you feel belonged? But if they are going through challenges, this is the point where you see the emotion. And an action point around it is to ask, what if it was me? What if I was the person who was being excluded from that conversation, excluded from the experience? And the golden rule, as it says, is, you know, treat others as you treat yourself. And sometimes just applying that rule changes the conversation because you see yourself in the other person's experience of non-inclusion. And the third part is bias. This is the biggest challenge for any inclusion to happen. There are conscious biases and there are unconscious biases. And the unconscious biases obviously are the ones that we don't even know that we carry. And sometimes we make decisions about race, gender, sex, and all of that, even though we know that that's not the right approach. And biases are a big, big block to inclusion. For example, in the 1970s, only 5% of the top orchestras had women in them, just 5%. In 20 years, that number became 35%. And the reason why that happened was not because there was, you know, an additional training for women or they had additional quotas for women. They just introduced one framework shift. And that one framework shift, one simple framework shift, design shift, was they made the auditions blind. And they said, we are only going to audition based on talent, and they don't know who that person is auditioning. That shifted, and in 20 years, that 5% representation of women in top orchestras became 35%. Biases are very, very difficult to acknowledge and to overcome. But the biggest block, the biggest way to overcome a bias is to become aware of our biases. I don't want to carry a label of being a biased person. It doesn't resonate with me. Nobody wants to carry that label. It's simply that we don't know. And sometimes we kind of believe that it's accepted as the norm and we get along with that. But the awareness opens up the doors to the light and says, you know, these things we can overcome. So I want to share a little video from Deloitte about biases and how we can shift them. I think it's a really powerful statement they are making there, because once we become aware of the biases that we carry, the unconscious and the, and we can educate ourselves on that. There is so much information out there. We start owning our judgments. And that's the very first step to including the people in our workplace. And we started out this experience with the loving kindness meditation, right? A very short version of that. In that, we constantly expanding our circle of acknowledging that we all have the same needs for happiness and joy and success and in whatever things that we do. We could make that into a 1 minute experience, you know, just as you walk into an into the door and in a meeting and see the diversity in that setting and to say, whatever biases I carry, whatever judgments I carry, beyond all of that, we are all human beings and we all have the same need for love and happiness. May we all be happy. May we all be loved. May we all, you know, cherish this moment and experience together so we can create win-wins. And that is a simple reminder in every single time that we step into this, into a meeting, we can do and create and shift our dialogues. The other big challenge is the messaging that we get every single day. Dictators, what's common for dictators throughout history, present and everywhere, they focus on the separation of people. They always identify one group that they can pit against the other, and that's where they get their power. Let's eliminate the dictators and their messaging from our life. We can surround ourselves with positive messaging. You know, we can start our day with ideas that say we are one rather than those that say we are different from each other, those that identify our differences and the way we can actually pit ourselves against each other. So I think those are a couple of ideas, you know, about suspending judgment. If we can overcome this part about judgments, I think we are very well into the compassion response that we want for making inclusion in our life, in our workplace. The very last step is with an awareness, now that we have noticed, now that we feel for that person's emotion, just as we would want to feel belong, we want the golden rule applied there. And then we say, you know, there is no judgments that's going to stop me from taking that compassionate stance. The next question is, what can I do? Ask. I think the great idea is for us to ask these people that we feel excluded, if we have built enough trust with them to ask, how can I make you feel more belonged in this workplace setting? How can we do this together and create a win-win? And sometimes these acts don't have to be large. They don't have to be dramatic. These are micro acts. In fact, the most impactful experiences are small events. I'm going to grab a cup of coffee and I grab a cup of coffee for you, because I know you like coffee, and I say, would you like to have a cup? Like these small acts, the way I smile at you when we are coming up the elevator, the way I recognize you by your name and say, how's your daughter today? Did she go to school all right? Right? This is what's going to make me feel included. Not major rewriting nothing against rewriting competency mapping for our organizations, but it's these micro actions that on a human scale, on an everyday scale, can make a difference. And if possible, creating support communities. Maybe we work in large organizations, maybe the messaging gets diluted when we move across teams, but we can band together people who see these ideas of compassion as a proper response to a lack of inclusion, to a lack of belonging. And that's where the magic can happen, to create support communities and give voice to those people who don't have a voice or are afraid to speak up. So one of the major things is, I mean, in this particular experience, we spoke about how we are noticing the challenge of somebody else and we are responding to it with compassion, but it doesn't always have to be a reactive response. Compassion, more often than not, is creating those circumstances, those opportunities. So it becomes a proactive experience. So proactively, we are stopping non-belonging. Proactively, we are stopping non-inclusion. As we hire, as we set the very first messaging as they enter the organization is to say, you are part of it. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that this is the experience that is norm for you in this organization. that's all fine when it comes to making others included. But more often than not, we fail to recognize that we are the ones who are going through challenges. You know, maybe I have a certain idea about my age stopping me from belonging to this organization, or my race, or my gender, or my sexual orientation. However that is, it's important to start with noticing the same four steps: noticing our challenges, managing our emotions, not seeing ourselves as a victim, because there it's feeling for somebody, here it's managing our emotion and saying, I don't want to take on a victim stance, but I want to take the power of belonging into my hands and remove the self-judgments, the gremlin voices, the biases that come into my mind, and step into action, educating myself, speaking up for my rightful place in the organization, not being held back by my limiting beliefs, and to belong to communities, to actively seek them out, and above all, on a consistent everyday practice self-care, self-compassion, learning to be good friends to ourselves in the journey. So the final part of this is speaking up for inclusion. We're privileged because now we are actively thinking about the idea of inclusion and compassion, and we have that ability, that the bandwidth to do so. But there are others who might not have that opportunity. And when we are empowered, the greatest measure of our success is to enable that empowers us for others, right? So if your role requires you or allows you to be a mentor, or if it allows you to create resource groups, great way to do it. But it doesn't have to stop within the organization. I think it can expand outside the organization. And I want to share this beautiful story of a good friend. His name is Feroz VR. He is a senior vice president at SAP. In 2012 or 11, his son was born and was diagnosed with autism. His son is severely autistic in the sense that he is nonverbal. And he took that difficult experience and started to and asked, how can I learn from this experience? How can I you know, come out of it? And one of the advice that he received was, use this as an opportunity for change, for making a difference in the lives of others. Use this as your life purpose. So as he read and he learned and he spoke to people, he realized the biggest challenge that most people who are parents of autistic children is, what are they going to do after I am gone? The biggest concern. And so he said, what if we can create opportunities for people who are in the spectrum? And instead of focusing on what they cannot do, which is what traditionally people were doing, he asked, what is it that they are good at? He realized that people in the spectrum were always truthful, very good at repetitive tasks that bore other people, who were very eager to work. And in fact, he realized that there were people that he had hired, you know, in the spectrum, didn't want to go back home after during the weekends, because they didn't see the logic of not having to work in the weekends. So, but anyway, so he thought about this, focusing on their strengths, and he found jobs for testing. I think there were 21 people in the initial cohort that he employed. This was in India at that time, and he realized, he ran a two-year study. In the 2 years, the people who were in the spectrum, completely 100% of them outperformed the regular software engineers in their ability to test. And it became a Harvard case study. He presented this at the UN and CNN and Forbes. Everybody covered that. So, and from that, a lot of other things expanded. Now he runs the India Inclusion Summit. Now, the reason why I'm sharing that story is, and I was also listening to a talk from another gentleman named Matthew Gonnering, who mentioned that the best way to create create a workspace where you get to know people and grow in your workplace is to include, you surround yourself with people with different perspectives. And that way they started employing people with disabilities, different parts of disabilities, different kinds of disabilities, and making them active working members of the workforce. So they feel belong, they feel. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is it doesn't have to be disability inclusion. It can be inclusion in the smallest ways, in how we perceive people and how we respond to it with compassion. And again, just to go back very quickly to those four steps, to simply notice, to feel for the other person by applying the golden rule, to suspend our judgments that come in the way of our compassionate response, and then finally asking, what can I do to alleviate that response? And if I am the person who is not feeling included, once again, applying those steps, but managing the emotions, not as a victim, but as a person of who creates change, who architects change, and creating opportunities that include building resource groups, educating ourselves, building the awareness of what we can. So I think that's where compassion becomes a very powerful tool against non-inclusion. So that's my spiel about compassion and inclusion. I would like to be, I think we have a few more minutes for questions. I would love to get your thoughts. Thank you, Carol. Thank you. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah. Thank you, Ken. I think it's a beautiful story, and I really wish that your friend creates that trust enough to say, I can be myself in this setting. I feel included. So it's great, great first steps. Beautiful. Thank you. Right. Beautiful. Yeah. Thank you for sharing, Karen. Appreciate it. So we have just a couple minutes more. Does anybody have a quick thought or comment or question before we wind up? Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much. Yeah, totally, totally. So I just looked at the time. It looks like we are at the hour dot. With that wonderful message from Rocky, I would say thank you with a wave. And I really appreciate the time that that Marilyn has created. Again, Marilyn, thank you. If you want to reach out and we want to continue the conversation, I would love to. So thank you so much. Oh, let me see. So there's my contact, Emmanuel@compassionleaders.com. That's my company. Thank you, Marilyn. Yes. Wonderful. Thank you so much. And you all have a lovely, lovely day, rest of the day. Yeah, take care. So it's a